Good morning, Senator Whitehouse. It's nice to have you here again.
It's nice to be here with you, Scott. Thanks for having me in.
You know, you've been home for about a week now on your spring break, of course, from this Congress. And I'm wondering what you heard from Rhode Islanders about what's going on. What do they see as some of the issues they want tackled?
There's been a lot of consternation about what happened on the gun vote. How is it possible that senators could have ignored the wishes of nearly 90% of the American people and voted down making background checks actually happen for so many gun buyers when we kind of concede that that's the policy that we should be following? They just like the loopholes better than the enforcement of the policy. And that, I think, was very frustrating for a lot of folks, very frustrating for us in the Senate who were supporters as well. And then, of course, the immigration bill is coming up. We start markup next week on it. I met with some of our Latino community leaders to hear from them what their thoughts were about the bill, and we're going to go through a good, I think, Senate regular order on that.
Now, the other thing that's interesting lately has been Social Security. It seems like the president, with his CPI chain, is moving towards giving the Republicans something on this issue. I know you and others on the more liberal side of the Democratic Party have been pretty adamant about the idea that Social Security is sacrosanct and should not be touched.
Yeah, I feel this pretty strongly. The president invited 10 Democrat senators maybe 2 or 3 weeks ago to have dinner with him in Washington, and Jack Reed and I were two of those 10 senators. And we both told him very candidly and directly that he could expect our opposition on that. I think there are two reasons that we should be opposed to it. One is that there are really two separate discussions. One is what goes on in the budget. Another is what happens in Social Security. They don't overlap. Social Security is forbidden by law to contribute to the deficit. It never has. It has a huge surplus. It has its own funding problems in the out years, in 2030 and beyond. But those are problems that we can work on and solve separately. We should not be using Social Security to offset the unbalanced budgets of recent years. And the second thing is, when you look at who has really profited the most in the downtime, who's had the most bailouts, who's been the most protected, who's gotten the most benefit of our economic recovery, it's been the folks at the top. And for Social Security recipients to be asked to take this hit when they all know that in recent years, the COLA that they've experienced, the cost of living adjustment, has been too low. Over and over, it's been too low. Frequently, it's been zero when they all know that in their lives, costs have gone up for food, for health care, for heating oil, for gasoline, all the things that they spend money on. So if there's a problem with the cost of living adjustment for seniors, it's that it's too low. And for the chain CPI to lower it further, I think, is wrong in a lot of dimensions.
Looking at the gun situation, there's been a lot of talk about it. Is it not moving any meaningful gun control simply because red state conservative Republicans are afraid of the NRA and primaries? Is that the major issue?
That is the major issue. My take on it is that the NRA was looking at supporting the at least parts of the bill. And they got a lot of blowback from their real far-right gun extremists. And a new organization popped up to try to peel off their members. So they had to kind of protect their franchise by walking back from Joe Manchin, who's an NRA lifetime member and somebody who ordinarily is on their side and is now calling them liars, the senator from West Virginia. I think that has a lot to do with it. What's changed, I think, is that it used to be kind of, you know, if you voted on the gun issue, the NRA was serious about it. And they would put people into primaries. They'd put ads on the air. They'd put money against you. The other side was never that involved. And so it may have been 85 to 15, but the 15 really put the stick to people, and the 85 went on to the next issue. So who do you listen to in politics? You listen to the 15. Now what's happened, particularly since Newtown, is that people are much, much more engaged. And I think a lot of people who thought they wouldn't get blowback for this vote are getting a lot of blowback for this vote. And I think that's going to give us a good reason to bring it up again, and if necessary, again, and if necessary, again after that.
Another issue that's cropped up lately is Guantanamo. Is it finally time to close the prison there?
I think it's been time to close it for a long, long time. Colin Powell, I think, is a very articulate voice as to why it's wise to shut down Guantanamo. The problem is that it's increasingly difficult to figure out what you do with the people who are still there.
Nobody wants them in their home state, is that it?
Nobody wants them in their home state. Nobody wants them in their home country, if you want to move them out. And some of them, it's pretty hard to put a case together on. We kept hearing how they were the worst of the worst, and then the Bush administration would release another 200 of them because they, in fact, weren't the worst of the worst. They'd been swept up and were there almost by accident.
Where is the so-called red line in Syria where the United States gets involved militarily, if there is one?
The only thing that I can see any support for in the Senate would be very contained operations that were designed to do one very specific thing, which is to get control of the chemical weapons that are in Syria in Assad's hands. If those fall into the hands of the extremists, you can only imagine the catastrophe that they could produce in cities in Europe, in cities in the Middle East, in cities in America. So I think that there's a lot of agreement. There'd be a lot of support for the president to do whatever needed to be done to make sure we secured those chemical weapons depots. Beyond that, I think there is zero desire to have boots on the ground in Syria ever.
Back here in New England, of course, the Boston Marathon bombing has just been a real tragedy. How do you think the FBI, you sit on the Judiciary Committee in the Senate, how do you think the FBI has done in handling this investigation?
We're still looking into it, and it's going to be important to get a full picture before we make any final decisions, because the FBI looks at a blizzard of information, and whether they saw this particular snowflake correctly or not, you don't want to be making decisions purely by benefit of hindsight. You want to make sure that you really are looking at how the systems work to protect the American people from this kind of what appears at this moment to be lone wolf or twin wolf, in this case, I guess, terror activity. Certainly, the entire law enforcement response was unbelievable, particularly for somebody like me who comes from that world and can remember the bad old days when the FBI and the Massachusetts State Police wouldn't talk to each other.
Right.
There has been so much breakdown of the old turf barriers that used to characterize law enforcement. I thought it was really very impressive the way that operation rolled out once the explosions detonated.
Thank you, Senator Sheldon Whitehouse.
Great to be with you, Scott. Thank you for the invitation.